So I have the honor of introducing our keynote speaker tonight. Neonu Span is a woman who is so near and dear to my heart. The year that I was a resident student at Pendle Hill back in 2004 and 5, Neonu served as the dean, which was the first of several years she held that position. From the first moment I met her, I could see the depth of wisdom, warmth, and love in her eyes. She is a seer who sees the whole of things, but also sees what got lost and what is needed to make the picture whole again. Neonu has a way of seeing and addressing reality and truth, but in a way that seeks to understand and not to judge. I can only begin to imagine how difficult it must have been for this strong and sensitive African-American woman to serve in a position of leadership at the Quaker Institution of Pendle Hill, with all its historic and present time whiteness. It speaks volumes to her character that she hung in there, loving us while also challenging us to open our eyes and see the hidden rules of Quaker culture that were there. In her workshop, Beyond Diversity 101, I remember her asking simple, open-ended questions like, how does class show up at Pendle Hill? And what about the culture here at Pendle Hill do you feel okay about? As a longtime diversity trainer, Neonu had come to realize that guilt and anger could not be the driving force of change in ending oppression. She strove to avoid labeling things as right and wrong, but more to see things with a sense of curiosity and open-heartedness and sometimes, yes, humor. She understands the wisdom that is available when we pay attention to our bodies on both the physical and the energetic levels. At Pendle Hill, we were typical Quakers who did not respond well to being told what to do. So Neonu creatively invented a word that year. When something was particularly important, she would say, friends, this is requirish. One of the serendipities in my journey in coming to Pendle Hill was discovering that Neonu was an amazing singer and had professional degrees in vocal performance. She organized a gospel choir, which I readily joined. I'll never forget how encouraging she was, no matter how untrained and even off-pitch individuals may be. She told us the first night that we needed to support each other with the music, that if we were uncertain about singing on pitch, we needed to stand next to someone who was confident about it, that we needed to lean into each other to hear the sounds. This is just one example of how Neonu cultivates a culture of lifting each other up. In this, she acknowledges the influence of her African-American culture, from which she learned to value the importance of connection and community in moving each of us forward. When I left Pendle Hill, everyone knew I was unsure about coming back to Cincinnati. Neonu said, if you return, I would like for you to sing with my group, Tribe One. I had been to the anniversary concert of this diverse ensemble of powerful singers and drummers in downtown Philadelphia, and I had witnessed the enthusiastic outpouring of appreciation from a standing room only crowd. I couldn't imagine singing with this amazing, accomplished group. They reminded me very much of the group Sweet Honey in the Rock, if any of you know that group. When I returned to Philadelphia, Neonu did not forget the invitation, and I found myself at my first rehearsal with them. So I want to tell you three things about Neonu I discovered that first rehearsal night. One is that she easily includes new people into her circle without hesitation and somehow manages to weave them seemingly effortlessly into the group. The second thing is that Neonu can create and hold any number of different melodies, rhythms, and harmonies in her head at the same time. With no written music, She directs each person to sing a part that she seems to compose on the spot. This gift of being able to hear on many different levels surely relates to Nionu's ability and passion to create harmony in a world of such diversity, with so many people with different backgrounds, stories, and melody lines. And the third thing that I want to tell you, what I learned that night about Nionu, this speaks to her ability to empower others to accomplish more than they ever would think possible. Many of you know that I'm an alto singer. Much to my dismay at that first rehearsal with Tribe One, Nionu turned to me and assigned me a high soprano part to sing, the highest part. I laughed nervously and said, "Nionu, I think you forgot that I'm an alto." The others in the group laughed and said, "No, you were an alto." So I ended up singing in a range that I had never sung in before and was surprised to see that I could do it. Nionu does not like to place people in a box. She has a way of compelling you to stretch without really feeling like you were coerced to do so. I could say so much more, but I'll stop by simply saying that I love this woman, and I'm thrilled that we all get to experience her presence here at Ohio Valley Yearly Meeting this year. Nionu will speak when she's ready out of the silence.
Good evening, friends. I want to express gratitude for this invitation to be with you and to share these thoughts and feelings with you. I want to express appreciation to those who served in the planning process and open to discerning how this year's sessions should be held. And I just always appreciate that role and that commitment. I also want to give honor to all of our ancestors who I feel are present in joining in this yearning for wholeness. And I've heard the word transformation. As I've sat in business meetings, and I want to honor the peoples of this land where we're sitting. I don't know who they all are. how close we are. It's Miami. Is that? So I just want to give honor always and bring visible those for whom this is their indigenous ground as we do our work together as friends. During our evening, there will be a time or two that I will ask you to engage in what I call heart listening. It will involve your being in groups of three, preferably. And so before we start, it might be good to at least be able to see how that can happen and get close enough to be in a group of three. Yeah, if it means you have to move a little bit, that's perfect. Yes, I love that. I'm seeing a possible group of three there. I got three there, nice. I remember one year when I was teaching at Friends Select School, we had a speaker come in that was talking about environmental racism. And if any of you have ever taught in a Friends school, sometimes the community meetings or sessions might be, you might have specific places to sit so that staff can know where people are. And so we were all used to, like, I sat with my advisory group and we had our places. And he asked us to all move to, like, this part of the auditorium. So the first thing is that we didn't think that we could all fit there. And the second thing is, like, once we were there, we could really feel how revolutionary that one request was before he even said a word. So does everyone have a group of three that you'll know where you're going to go? There's. Does everyone know who their three are so that when we, there's, Paulette, there's a need over here. Oh, okay. So we'll have two groups of four. Is that what we need to do? Okay, great. It'll make the activity a little rushed for the groups of four, but we'll work it out. Beautiful. So I want to start by asking you to help provide the soundtrack for this plenary. Great. So let me have folks that are kind of like to the right here in this part to here. You're going to be, when we put this all together, you'll be the first group. Okay? And what's the guy in the purple? You can move. Yeah, I have a feeling you're supposed to be in that group. This is going to be the second group when we get to it. And this side will be the third group. Because you look a little rambunctious, like just a tad. Quakerly rambunctious. We need that for three. But everyone, if you could just join in, I'll just sing this for you a couple times. It says, I can see, I can see, I can see through illusion. Just try that much. I can see, I can see, I can see through illusion. Great, that's the first part. I can see, I can see through illusion. And then it says, I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. So that was a first part and then the second part. So let's just try, I'll just keep singing it until you'll get it, and you'll get it. I can see, I can see, I can see through illusion. I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. From the top, I can see, I can see through illusion. I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. One more time. I can see, I can see through illusion. I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. So there's a little bit of syncopation in there. And it's that, well, there's more than that, but the one that's very, that needs to be there is the one, oh. So it's like, I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. So it feels like it's like anticipated. It feels like it comes in before the beat. So let's try it. I can see, through illusion. I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. Nice, nice, so you've got it. Who did I say was the second part? So just stay right where you are. Don't change your part. So this part will be, I can see, through illusion. I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. And if any of you have ever been told you can't sing or you can't hold a harmony, just like rip it out. Just for tonight, you can put it back in right after. I can see, try, let's try it all the way from the top. F. I can see, through illusion. I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion. So who in this part feels like I've got it, I'm like solid? Okay, great. Can you, just if you would come up and lead this section so they don't lose their way. No, you can, no, we ain't doing that. All right, so it was the guy here with the blue shirt, young, you feel like you have it, right? Oh, no, he's not. All right, what's your name?
Peter.
Peter. I can see, you're on. I can see,
I can see, I can see through illusion. I can see, see. Oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion.
Add this part.
I can see through illusion. I can see. I can see. Oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion.
Okay, so Peter, you got nervous in you. You got a little nervous. Someone that also has a part would join Peter, please. Because that's part of what happens. You get nervous, and then you lose your center a little bit. So you got to join. Yes. All right, so just this part.
I can see. I can see. I can see through illusion.
Thank you.
I can see. I can see. Oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion.
And the second part.
I can see. I can see. I can see through illusion. I can see. I can see. Oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion.
Sing your part.
I can see.
I can see.
I can see.
I can see.
I can see through illusion.
Okay, so hold on a second. So you got it? So it's I can see. I can see. I can see. I can see. So let's just do that much. I can see. I can see.
I can see.
I can see.
I can see through illusion.
All right, so let me just teach this part.
Okay, without us.
I can see. I can see. I can see through illusion.
Right. So they have, what's your name?
Chie.
Chie? Thank you for coming up, Chie. Can you just sing in the mic the one part? So we have just one person singing, and you can learn your part. Ready?
I can see.
I can see.
I can see.
I can see.
I can see through illusion.
That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. And then you join back in on the melody. Okay? Beautiful. One. Two, one, two, everyone.
I can see,
I can see,
I can see,
I can see,
I can see through illusion. I can see, I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion.
Let's get this part in there.
I can see,
I can see,
I can see,
I can see,
I can see through illusion. I can see, I can see, oh, I can see through illusion. Oh, I can see through illusion.
Last time.
I can see,
I can see,
I can see.
I can see.
I can see through illusion. I can see. I can see. Oh, I can see through illusion.
Hold the last note.
Oh, I can see through illusion.
Okay, thank you. The illusion that we cannot sing. The illusion that we don't have rhythm. All righty. Thank you so much. I wouldn't mind coming to my workshop tomorrow. Thank you, friends. To be more inclusive is part of the theme that you chose for this time. To be more inclusive, you could open your arms wider. But as you're opening your arms wider, you are also increasing exposure. Exposure of who you define as yourself and the exposure of those being welcomed. And increasing exposure to what, you might say. I want to work on fully understanding an answer to that question. That will be part of our assignment tonight if we intend to be a truly inclusive religious society of friends. So the first query I would ask of you is, who do you feel to be missing? Who is missing for you? Really missing? Who or what do you yearn to see included? Not who do you feel you should want to be included, but truly, who or what are you yearning to see included? That query will be at the center of just a quick practice in the heart listening. So there are three roles in the heart listening. One is the speaker. Another is the listener. And the third is the holder. So the speaker that's listed here as number two will just have a minute, just for this round, just 1 minute, to respond to the query. The speaker will be speaking to a person that is a listener. And the listener has two focus areas, and I want to be really clear about this. One is to pay complete attention to the person that's speaking. And the second is a little less common, a common task, and that is to track yourself as you're listening. And I'm going to invite you to track, to notice your body and emotional senses. So the listener is listening to the person speaking and also trying to pay close attention to what's going on for them in their body and on the emotional level. What I'd like for you not to be tracking is your opinion about what the person is saying, or an analysis of any type about what's being shared with you. This is just a practice. I'm inviting you to this as a practice. So whatever opinions you're having right now about my inviting you into the practice, they're valid, but if you would set them aside and just say, I'm just gonna practice this, it's just a minute. Tracking yourself inward, body and emotion. The third role, the holder, is holding both the speaker and the listener with as unconditional acceptance as you can muster. I do this with a lot of folks. Doing it with a group of friends is probably one of the easiest in terms of explaining the holder. It's a practice that I think we come very close to often. Other folks ask a lot of questions about the holder. What do you mean? But still, you might start having some opinions or analysis that come up, and I'm just going to invite you to come back to holding both the speaker and the listener with unconditional. And then the very last step will be just a few seconds for the listener to share with the speaker, this is what I noticed within me. This is what I noticed within me. Not when you talked about your child, I wondered if you ever tried this, or can I talk to you later about that because I have a suggestion of, so none of that, just this is what I tracked within myself. Okay? So the group of four, the two groups of four, what I'm going to ask if you would do is, one person will not get to speak in this quick round through, so just be discerning about what you'd like to step into. The two people could both be holders in that. Okay, so this is the query, what I just said, which is, who do I feel to be missing? Who am I, or what am I yearning to see included? Okay, so just decide who's going to speak, who's going to listen, and I will let you know when to start since I'm timing you. Is everybody good? I see someone standing. Are you trying to find another person? Yes. No. So this is the first round is the first speaker, and then we'll move to a second speaker and the third speaker. Okay, so first speaker, if you would start, it's 1 minute. And I'm going to give a half that time for the person that was listening to share what they tracked. Who are you missing and yearning for inclusion in the Religious Society of Friends? Okay. All right, so just person that was tracking is sharing back now. Yay. Okay. So remember I said this was a practice round? I mean, this is for us to sort of get the flow of it. We'll have another opportunity to go a little deeper. So decide who's going to be the second speaker in your group, who will be the listener. Okay, if you start, 1 minute. So if the listener would share what you tracked within yourself during that short sharing. Beautiful, and thank you. So the third and final speaker responding to the query of who do I feel is missing? Who or what am I yearning to see included? And I will start the time now. and the listener to share back what you noticed within yourself. So we're not going to take time right now to like kind of process what that was like, but I just want you to bring up to your consciousness what it was like for you, whether there was a sense of centeredness, whether there was frustration, whatever it was that came up for you, just make a note. And if you can follow the thread a little bit of where that comes from, just note that as well. So an important, and I believe impactful practice for any, let's say, institution that's intending justice or peace or inclusion, and particularly, I would say, for members of the Religious Society of Friends, is the practice that I will call here the practice of forced recognition or intentional remembering. Because we live within a larger society that has its foundation based in a yearning for liberty next to a brutality and power over and discarding and dismissing sacred traditions of the people. Because we live in a larger society that had a systematic dismantling of communities, and because we live in a larger society that has bolstered its existence as a country with law enforced forgetting, those community gatherings where traditions, language, symbols that reminded us of our true meaning, our essential selves, our unlimited power, these were outlawed or reframed as less than or evil. And lest you be picturing, when I'm talking about these traditions, lest you be picturing only people of color, I want you to broaden who you're picturing. I want you to also be picturing the tribes or clans of Scotland. So we are in a society that intentionally and deliberately inserted false tales that carry an elixir, a calming, disarming, debilitating, and addictive agent The illusion has been designed and deployed with intention. Therefore, to heal, to reconnect, to repair, I believe we must also be intentional about the process and practice of remembering. I think we need to be intentional about,
I can see through illusion.
You've invited me to join you at a time when the illusion is being shaken throughout the world. Lies of a fair and just society are being exposed in such graphic ways. And the illusion is also being disturbed by a pull of a compelling and very different reality. A deep yearning for a beloved community. Not that I don't remember it being yearned for when I was quite young in the 60s or through the 70s, 80s, 90s, but there is something I feel about this time of how in our face the pictures are, the words that have been captured on audio. So, but we know what happens when existing structures are challenged. We know that very well by just looking at ourselves, our personal selves as individuals or our small family unit. Try taking away just for one day or a week those things that serve as the glue of our existence. The morning coffee, that NPR station with those particular voices, the way we do our summer travel, our daily meditation practice, the ways that we check in with our life partner, going into the office, a workout session. These are things that, I mean, we just take them away for a minute, you know, one day, and already we start feeling off kilter. So have you noticed how the resistance comes up, even at gatherings like this? What are the complaints about? So then, What of a whole system, a U.S. system of exclusion and privilege, a supremacist society, a dominator mentality? See, I always feel like it's pretty natural to run into guardians of the status quo. And we, as a religious society of friends, are faced with the daunting task of making visible just where and how our society overlaps with and thus reinforces systems of oppression. That's what we at least give words to, having a commitment to finding out where and how there is that overlap. Last night, Michael Burkle spoke three phrases that I want to repeat and have us consider more deeply as we work toward transformation, the transformation that I believe our hearts are yearning for and Spirit is calling us to. First, he asked, what does it mean to acknowledge and appreciate someone else's faith? I'd like to remove the last three words and simply ask tonight, what does it take to acknowledge and appreciate? Then I ask, what does it take to acknowledge and appreciate when your heart is breaking? When our hearts are breaking collectively? There is a natural inclination when your heart is breaking to shield, to protect, to cover over. I believe that in order to be inclusive, some of our work is the resistance of that inclination to shield, to cover over. And I would offer to friends that we must be mindful of the propensity to use the intellect as our veil, distorting our ability to see clearly, to name directly, and be transformers. In the midst of the deepest sadness, I encourage us to be suspicious of the rising prominence of the intellect. I know I say that in the midst of academia and it's definitely not to discard the precious part of us, the precious God-given part of us that is the intellect, but it's about how it rises oftentimes at the very point when we might be able to see a potential wholeness, connection with others. Pauline Boss, whose research is based in trauma and who's recognized in writing about ambiguous loss, some of you may have heard of her latest book with that title, Ambiguous Loss, says that our country is founded in suffering. And I would add, and she would also agree, that our country is sustained in some ways by denial. So this year, this very month that we are still in has been filled with what I would call veil lifting events. We've been surrounded and forced to see what was already there. And whether we acknowledge it or not, it causes great sadness. So I'm going to ask if you would return to your groups of three. And I will keep time once again. This time, I'd like the speaker to have 3 minutes and the listener to track yourselves, but I'm not going to give you a specific time to share back what you're tracking, but try to practice the same practice, and the holder is holding. So I will be a timekeeper for you, for the speaker to speak for 3 minutes on what has happened in our society that has caused your heart to cry, that has caused great sorrow for you, that you have felt great sorrow in. Even if you haven't noticed feeling it before, what has happened in our society in this over this past year. Okay, so just 3 minutes. Decide who's going to be the first speaker. Maybe the groups of four might allow one of the folks that didn't get a chance to speak. So I'm keeping time for the first speaker now. If you could start bringing your comments to a close. So just a few moments of silence and appreciation for the person that shared and beholder and listener. And go ahead and decide who's to speak next. And I'm keeping time for you.
you could start bringing your sharing to a close.
A few moments of silence and appreciation for speaker, listener, holder. And lastly, the third person that's going to speak, 3 minutes. What has happened in our society that has caused your heart to cry, caused you great sorrow? 3 minutes. If the speaker can begin to wind down your thoughts. Just some moments to appreciate the one that just shared from their heart. Listener and holder.
I would offer that the question that Michael presented last night, that within that question, we find an answer to acknowledge there's something about that word that I was drawn to understand as acting on the knowing of, and to appreciate, to take an account of. So I'd like to play, and I'm going to ask our sound guy up there, that I'm going to try to play something from my phone. I'm not going to play something from my phone. Yeah. I'm going to tell you what I was going to play, which are the opening words in the book that Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote called Between the World and Me. And I would encourage, if any of you have not read that, I would encourage you to pick it up and read it, more so to listen to him read it if you have that possibility. Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me. Because I want to leave a little time for us at the end, I'm gonna skip that part. But I wanna move to just another phrase that Michael spoke last night, which was the power of mutual recognition. In a sense, we've been practicing that some in our groups of three. And as soon as I heard him speak those words, I vibrated with the healing power of mutual recognition. I love the word recognition, because cognize is to know or be aware of, and re before it implies this, I interpret it as more this mystical invitation that we did know and were aware of, and we need to recognize. The work is recognizing for us. And I feel this amongst friends probably more than any place that I am, partly because of the core of our faith is in each of us having access to the divine. People who live on the margins must, for survival's sake, be conscious of the ins and outs, the rules of the dominant culture. White, middle-class, straight folks have the privilege of not seeing if they choose. They often experience little need to make visible the ins and outs of white supremacy.
So it takes real work to reach then this sort of mutual recognition that will lead to wholeness. I don't know, does that make sense? Maybe the word is not so much work as commitment, that it takes a real commitment to reach a mutual recognition when we're coming oftentimes from such different places in how we sit within this culture, the dominant culture. The piece that I wanted to play that Ta-Nehisi Coates spoke, he's writing this letter to his 15-year-old son, who saw, of course, the video of Eric Garner being killed by a police officer. And he's writing this piece to his son, and he says, his son stayed up waiting to see the conviction of the police officers. And he says, when you saw that the police officers, that no one would be held responsible, you stood up and said, I have to go. And you went into your room and I heard you crying. And I did not come into your room right away, but I waited 5 minutes and came in. And I did not try to comfort you because I didn't feel that I should try to comfort you. And I did not tell you that everything would be okay because I have never believed it would be okay. Those were Ta-Nehisi Coates' words. And I understand why Ta-Nehisi Coates says, I have never believed that it will be okay. Because there is such a predominance of evidence that would dispute King's proclamation that the arc of the moral universe bends toward justice. Yet I cannot stand with my brother in his belief that it will never be okay. For I am compelled to lean not on my own understanding, statistics, or history when it comes to our potential for transformation. Friends, I believe, or I want you to join me in leaning on a deeper promise. I want to close with reading the final passage from the talk that I gave in 2007. The Michener Quaker lecture. Friends, we are seeking wholeness and the Spirit will assist us. God will assist us, is assisting us, offering strength and offering grace. We have a great gift to offer the world, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I am not hesitant about saying it. There is a great gift that we have to offer the world in our practices and testimonies. I mean the testimonies that spell spice or whatever, and I mean the testimonies that are our stories, are what we have seen and known. people are fascinated wanting to know how we come to be, how we come to speak some of the truths that we speak in the world, and the work that we are doing. I yearn for us to share these stories and share also how we have gotten stuck in our illusions and how we are trying and how we are moving. We are seeking wholeness, healing. And first, we must face and let go of patterns of denial. I believe we have to learn how to call them out for each other. At Philadelphia Yearly Meeting right now, where I was able to sing for the opening night, placed all over the campus where Yearly Meeting is being held is a description of patterns of diversity. And I would say sort of patterns also of denial, to practice calling them out. I'd love to join together and say, yes, we will reject all manner of denial and see through the many illusions. Yes, we are one in the spirit. And as we live into our call to acknowledge and appreciate, as we stand in and for mutual recognition, then I believe we will enjoy the third phrase that Michael used last night that I loved. Then we will enjoy the hidden treasures desiring to be known. Those treasures that are within you, within us, and those that are yearning to join us. I just can't give up now. I've come too far from where we started from. Nobody told us the road would be easy, but I don't believe you brought us this far to leave us. Thank you, friends.
Are friends okay if we go over a little bit with some questions and answer time? Okay. I'm going to bring the mic down. Just raise your hand if you have some kind of question or comment for this inspiring woman.
Uh, I've been a member of yearly meeting and a monthly meeting within it for about 22 years, and I have no idea what it would be like to be in a meeting that was culturally and racially diverse. Mm. Are you in one, a monthly meeting that is, and what's it like?
Well, amongst friends, I sort of carry my diversity with me. But it's like when friends ask, do I miss the music? And I go, no, not when I'm in worship. I don't miss the music because I'm usually bringing it. But I am in Chester, PA. I've got to say that it is the first meeting that I've been at that not only is racially diverse, but where I haven't had the feeling of white friends trying to get something from me. And that getting something from me could be anything from practicing not saying the wrong thing to, you know, there's just a feeling that somehow is oftentimes there. And I have really appreciated that. I really appreciated that. But it's a very small meeting, so if we have 10 folks at meeting on Sunday, it feels like, whoa. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could share with us what signs of hope you have observed in the last year or in the recent past.
Well, it's a strange kind of thing, Rex. So as painful as it is to see some of the video that we've seen this year, there's a weird way that knowing that many people are seeing it and responding gives me some hope of maybe the veil staying lifted. So that's the first thing I would say. I live with my parents that are both 88, that will turn 89 in September, and a lot of my sense of hope comes when I'm noticing the difference in the world through their eyes, what they have prayed for. So much has come to fruition that they prayed for. Within our religious society of friends, I'm noticing friends using language and yearning to make commitments that I did not see 8 years ago, 10 years ago. I mean, even in your business sessions. I mean, just to have the word racism mentioned, or not to mention white supremacy, actually mentioned amongst friends, gives me a sense of hope. Now, whenever that happens, then there's the guardians of the status quo. So I'm always watching for both of those. Those are a few that I would say. And I would say, you know, movements like Black Lives Matter, to hear that they're offering meditation and massages at their gatherings, and this thing about self-care feels like it's moving in the movements, and definitely in ways. So it's not just burn yourself out, you know, show up at every action, just do it. That's another thing that really gives me a sense of hope.
Yeah. What else? Anything?
Can you speak a little bit more about the ambiguous loss and the trauma? And is that a collective consciousness loss, or more, is the author more talking about a personal, or both?
She really is talking about any loss where you don't have either the body or the information to kind of make sense of it, where it's hard to kind of make sense of it. The reason I mentioned it tonight is because she also talks about generational, that she believes that we carry a lot of this stuff generationally. So check out her book. There's also an On Being episode that she speaks in. If you listen to On Being on NPR, beautiful piece that she does. In the 5-day Beyond Diversity 101 workshop that I do, it's part of why I always have body work during that time, because I think a lot of stuff is locked in here that we don't even know is going on. Ross is the last name. Oh, I moved it.
Pauline Boss.
Thank you. Pauline. So there was someone down here. Oh, and someone up. Pauline Boss, B-O-S-S.
I have a sense of a recognition among friends of brokenness, but not often a diagnosis of why. Mm. Any comments on that?
Yeah, I'm really I'm really big on getting to the roots, which to me is some of that diagnostic of, you know, where not only where did stuff come from in a history point of view, but what did we make of what happened? What are the stories that we came up with? That to me feels like the juicier part. A lot of times we study the history, but you know, I oftentimes will say, you know, we know in slavery, for instance, that they were house slaves. And, you know, we might know that history. But my question is, like, who are the house slaves today? Because I feel like, you know, there's a tendency to repeat patterns. So when I say that, like, so in working with other African-American folks in my community, I want to look at how we perpetuate the system of supremacy. So how do I put myself on the auction block today? You know, and that's the question to me that is, like, connected to what you're saying. Like, why do I feel like I can't do anything? Or why do I feel like, well, it's the white man's world, so I'm not gonna get up then, you know. No, I wanna dig that up. I wanna get to that, because to me that's the transformative power for us to see where we make these choices based on stories that we've made up or belief systems that are there and assumptions. So, yes, friend. I mean, that's part of how I would relate. But I don't wanna get caught up just in the historical, having a historical discussion. That's where it, why? I mean, I'm asking you all why. I mean, why do we not wanna just do, just learn the history, this, what we call historical facts. Yeah, I mean, yes, it's intellectualizing, but I mean, I'd love to.
It's making it more distant.
Yes.
I mean, the whole brilliance of the Black Lives Matter movement is, well, it didn't all end when Dr. King was assassinated.
Right.
You know,
right.
We've got a continuing
right.
agenda.
Right.
We have things to do.
Right.
God has laid on us things to do.
Yes.
And we have to attend to our business.
Yes. 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 There's a distancing that happens. Right.
So after Trayvon Martin, after Michael Brown and Ferguson, after all the other incidents we talked about, we're a new people.
Yes.
And we need to live into that.
Yes. Yes. I hope everybody can hear. Yeah. And there's a woman back here. Paulette said, I didn't know just introducing you meant I was going to have to run around with the microphone.
No, I'm actually enjoying this.
Oh, good.
Well, I think this is somewhat related. One of the confusions, but perhaps conflicts or just feeling kind of mixed up about these issues. One, I think is related to what I would say is thinking big and thinking small. I do often want to put things in historical context, so when yet another tragedy
mm-hmm.
occurs,
mm-hmm.
I think, well, gee, you know, this has been around in American history for hundreds of years, and
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's to me a sort of thinking big, and then I think, well, I better just you know, think small, think local, because I really can't quite cope with that.
Mm.
Sometimes it's sort of perhaps it's just being here that's bringing it up, but I think there's an element of anxiety
mm-hmm.
and probably guilt
mm-hmm.
about what directions I might take. So I wondered if you could comment on that.
Mm. When you say guilt about what directions you might take, you mean in terms of talking about this?
Or actions.
Or actions. Yeah. You know, I have very strong feelings about guilt, about the inhibiting power of guilt, the way that guilt spins you off into a story about not so much deservedness, but movement, like movement. And so friends, I mean, it's absolutely antithetical to the notion of that of God in each person moving. I feel like our whole faith, Michael, when you said last night that there's some people to say, well, how can you stay with being in Islam, knowing what it does or how it's been? And I so related to the response that you gave, but this is my faith. This is where I feel at home. Many people have asked me, based on some things that have happened to me amongst friends, why on earth do you stay there? And so how this relates to your question to me is the way that I experience guilt from white folks and from Quakers is that it only serves to keep you from connecting and from moving. It doesn't mean that you give up what you feel guilty that you have, And I would not want to see people give that up. But what it seems like it does is it blocks connection and movement and authenticity. And so it blocks authoring authority, which I believe comes from our divinity, from our divine connection. So what I'm always trying to do is, I see you in me. Do you see me in you? You know? Yeah. And we're in a system where people that have been oppressed want to work, because one of the ways of feeling a sense of power is to work the guilty, guilty mind and the guilty heart. So I can play off of that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I know that you're feeling guilty about, like you don't want to leave the room, you want to leave, but you don't want to leave because you don't want to walk out when a black speaker is speaking because of how it might look, then there's a way that I can play that. That's like a small example, but it really can play out in real survival ways, and it keeps me operating from this less than powerless mindset and working with folks that are guilty. I know that probably went a little deeper, that answer, than we wanted to get tonight, but that's the real dynamic to me in that. So what I'm always looking for is white folks that will stand in the power of who they are full up, and then we can do this thing together. I'm not really in love with the ally, white ally, because sometimes what people mean by white ally is to kind of walk behind me and make sure that they don't interrupt, that they don't say, that they support everything I say. That's a stage, but the next stage is being full up and you speaking fully what it is that you see to be changed and transformed in the world. And I know some folks need to leave, but there's a friend here.
Well, I just tried to be really loud.
That would work.
So I feel like the song that you gave us to sing, something that's coming up for me.
Mm.
There's all these layers in the world, in human life. Like there's men and there's women, there's black and there's white, there's old and there's young, there's all these religions and things. And it all gets in the way of the truth, inner.
Mm-hmm.
The light of God and everything. Mm-hmm. That
mm-hmm.
Person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The way that it resonates is, I would call that the most essential truth.
Yay.
I mean, I would call that the most essential truth, and then I recognize this relative truth that we live in a world that I want you to see me, Neonu, the essence of me that you feel. And I want you to know that I have walked this world as a black woman in this country, and that I have four black sons that have a very particular experience. So sometimes let's just be all beings and, that thing, which I think is absolute truth, is a way of dismissing this other reality. And so that's the way I relate to what you're saying. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's how we're challenged on this plane.
And I don't have the answers, but I'm struggling.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Nionu?
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to the remark about history and the question about what do we do when we focus on history. I feel like there's a lack of awareness of the DNA kind of history, you know, that's come down from our own ancestors, that takes it out of just that realm of intellect and distancing. And I, well, two things. One is, as a person from German descendants, and this German descendants in Cincinnati, you know, the history of what happened to Germans in Cincinnati and the repression and, you know, First World War, and even the socialists that came over and were totally shut out. That's in my genes. And so there is fear from passed on from that repression.
Absolutely.
That we don't often think about as white people in this country.
Right. Right.
And I remember a tape that you played for us at Pendle Hill. I forget the name of the African-American psychologist who coined the phrase, the post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Yes.
But you talked, she talked at length about the kind of patterns that play themselves out today from that slavery experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, and I have been working in schools, like the last school, I was the only, practically the only white paraprofessional in the building, and mostly all African American kids, and I'm very aware of the things that you that she said on that tape that I see being played out a lot. I don't feel in a position to say anything, but I wish that everybody would understand their DNA or the things that got passed down in through the ancestrals.
Yeah, absolutely. So we need to let friends go. Yeah. I know, there's a woman back there that's had her hand up for a long time.
Well, it's sort of along the same lines. I mean, for you to maybe unpack along with the history question, the when you say remember, I mean, I'm hearing Toni Morrison, I'm hearing the family secrets that we need to dig down in the roots, and so I don't know what you really didn't unpack that term for me, and again, it plays in with your final song that he's brought us this far.
Mm-hmm.
We remember that Exodus story, because that's what helps give us hope, but so would you unpack? That's what I interpreted from you. I don't know whether I'm reading a lot in there, but when you say remember, what are you referring to? That's a historical question.
Well, of course it's historical to some degree, but I guess the simple, I'll just give the simple, is what we were doing in the groups of three. which is making a space for the all of us to come up and out. So first, to me, the remembering is here, reconnecting, head, heart, body. So that would be where I would start. And we could say how friends, what our history, how our history led us to a place where the disconnection from the body is as strong as it is. And that both comes racially, but also through some real teachings. So that's the first remembering. But in a purest sense, it's really about our connection. What's your name?
Dale.
Dale. So there is a way in which, Dale, that I feel that what I yearn for with you as, you know, sister-brother relationship would be for us to go to the place where you really see me as a sister and I really see you as a brother. And then we remember who we are. And that's what I yearn for the most amongst friends. Yeah. This woman in the corner, can you shout it out? No. Microphone. This is last one.
Okay, I have a little story. It's not deep and very serious, but I think it's illustrative of our situation with as friends trying to diversify. I have a very large black son, and he went to meeting. He doesn't usually attend meeting, but he did go to meeting in Oregon where he lives now. And after meeting, one of the older members of the meeting came up to him and said, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you. We need more people of color." You know, lovely, right? Anyway, however, Peter does have some pretty good people skills. And it turned out that both Peter and this woman had lived in Japan for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So they ended up sitting down and speaking Japanese for half an hour. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a nice outcome, but it's, you know, the awkwardness, the goodwill, the not knowing how to behave.
Right.
I mean, it was just so indicative of
right
where we are as Quakers.
Right.
So yes. I thought I'd share that as a bit of comic relief on top of all this heavy spiritual stuff.
Oh, was that a heavy dag? I hear you. I hear you. Bottom line. Yeah. Thank you so much, friends. Thank you.
I'm used to
no applause at Quaker gatherings, so definitely happy about that. And thank you, Michael, for feeding my soul last night in a way that I could really expand on what I had planned to say. Thank you.